The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The next point I wanted to make is just that ESG funds are really costly to the economy. If you look at what has happened to U.S. oil and gas production, we peaked out at 13 million barrels a day under Trump. Today, we're at somewhere between 11 and 12 million barrels a day, even though the price is higher. So we should actually be producing more oil, you know, at a higher price than we would. And so we estimate, I did the study with Casey Mulligan, an economist at University of Chicago, that we're probably producing, thanks to Biden's policies, 2 million less barrels a day of oil here in the United States. At $80, $70 to $80 a barrel, this is imposing about a $200 billion cost on the American economy. Think of that, $200 billion because we're not producing our energy here at home.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was Stephen Moore, and it's good to be back here with you, taking a look at the economy, the markets. They closed higher today. This is on a week after the debt ceiling was reached, right? A deal that keeps the U.S. from defaulting on its obligations. But look, there's a lot of concerns right now, and Peter Granich is going to be stopping by. I want to tap into his expertise. You can join me, too. Feel free to dial in at 888-914-9149. Mortgage rates are up, right? I know things might be very difficult for you. There are still concerns about a rate hike from the Federal Reserve. And also about employment numbers. Even though the latest department report showed nearly double the numbers of jobs being created than was expected. So new jobless claims, they jumped up last week to 261,000, which, by the way, is the highest level since October 2021. And that was in the middle of the pandemic. So, you know, what's going on? Let's take a look at it. Let's talk about it. When it came to the debt deal, we all kind of knew this was going to get completed, right? After the debt deal was reached, there hasn't been a whole lot of major economic news, although the Supreme Court, they're actually expect to hand down a decision soon that's, you know, on whether or not the student loan forgiveness program from the Biden administration is legal. That's a big story. I mean, the president, I saw him the other day on the air, he was talking about still pushing that forward, wanting that to happen. And that is a proposal some experts say is more than likely to be struck down as unlawful, which could make life a little bit harder for a lot of people. And if you have student loans, you know how crippling that they could be, you know, how many of them add up. But on top of that, student loan payment recess is going to come to an end very soon as well. So that was written into the debt ceiling bill that was passed last week. So strap on your seatbelt and get ready because those bills are going to start coming your way. You know, the market turmoil for companies like Target and Anheuser-Busch, it makes Bud Light, that's also causing leaders from other companies to sit up and take notice. I saw a report that I think it was in Newsweek. Newsweek even saw that a number of companies didn't tweet out their usual support for the so-called Pride Month last week. That is very telling, isn't it? Very, very telling. They're starting to realize that there are a lot of ordinary Americans who just want to live ordinary lives without having to bow down to the LGBTQ lobby. But we'll see what happens there. I mean, it is went from Pride Week to Pride Month. I thought that was telling, don't you? I think companies are now facing a new challenge. They really are. They're facing this challenge as to whether or not they go down this lane or not. And we'll see. We'll see whether or not they think it's good for business. That's the bottom line. I don't think they care morally one way or the other. I think they care about what it means for their bottom line. I'm joined right now by Peter Granich. Let's get into it. We'll talk about this and a whole lot of other things. He's a former Wall Street whiz kid. And I always like to say he didn't even have a high school diploma when he became famous on Wall Street. You know, he made millions and lost millions, which has got to be very difficult. And he wrote a book called Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid. And it's a pretty interesting story. If you've never picked it up, try to get a hold of it. Well, Maggie, we still have it on our website. I think it was a download that we had here. Well, I'll ask Peter. He knows how to get it. But it's a story of how Catholic faith ultimately led to true Christian conversion. And you can tap into Peter's expertise, too. He's got a website called petergranich.com, petergranich.com. His company is called Peter Granich & Company, and he provides guidance on matters of finance. And it's always good to tap into his expertise here. And you're more than welcome to do the same thing by dialing in. Peter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew.
Good to be with you again. I'm delighted to have you here. Your book, Confessions of a Former Wall Street Whiz Kid, is it on your website? Is that the best way to get it?
Well, you can read it actually for free on the website. It's under suggested readings. You could also just type it in. It may also bring you in a Google search. I don't know if it's still on your website or not, Drew. I haven't looked at it in a while.
I don't know. Okay, but I'll drive them to your site, petergrandich.com. Check it out. Read a story. I do have a personal question. The way everything is happening economically right now in the country, and this is kind of a head scratcher. I saw a piece this morning. Somebody says, hey, be prepared. The stock market might continue to climb. Is there any reason for the markets to be climbing right now? A lot of people did not expect this to happen. What's driving market growth?
Well, there are reasons. There is always a bent to the bullish side in Wall Street. We had a fairly vicious decline. There is a eternal optimism by what I coined the don't worry, be happy crowd on Wall Street. You've heard me say before, they could be tossed off the Empire State Building all the way down. They'll all say the same thing. Hey, so far, so good. Mm-hmm. And there's enough pause at the moment to give reason for the market to rally. In fact, the market has rallied, but what is the market? What we're finding is in the S&P 500, 9 stocks were almost 90% of the rally. So it's not widespread, but nevertheless, it's been up. And quite frankly, in the last couple of weeks, I've spoken to my people that want to listen that I'm actually hoping for a rally because too many people are still over-leveraged in stocks. Now, I'm not winning any fans because I'm kind of like Switzerland in the market now. I'm not in the camp that's looking for a 30, 40% decline and all these things. Yeah. And I'm not in the camp that we're going back to all-time highs and all. I think the market's going to go into a very sideways action as social, political, and economic factors worsen. But let me just say this to you. I made my last two posts on my Twitter page, and I want to ask you something in all seriousness, Drew. Do you remember when we used to hear all the time about another country where the current president or prime minister is having his or her opposition criminally charged or arrested, while at the same time the opposition is accusing them of criminal acts?
Yeah,
that happened all the time. And what do we always say? What a fiasco. Well, guess what? The fiasco is now here. We have a former president who's trying to run again, being charged by the administration being run by a president where accusations are kind of widespread about his own potential criminality. And this is just not conducive when you add in all the other social, political, and economic factors to have any strong convictions long term. You just talked, as I heard in your lead-in, about the debt. Well, we all knew they were going to do that. That's how it's gotten to $32 trillion. We're on our way to $50 trillion in debt. Someone please tell me how we're going to pay that off or even service the interest. But let me also say that my absolute last post on my Twitter was a reminder that from Psalms 32:7, you are my hiding place. You will protect me from trouble and surround me with songs of deliverance. So even though I may speak of a negative view, I find peace and my salvation in our Lord. And I think that's what kind of needs people going to have to do, no matter what, where we may go economically, socially, politically. If you're not grounded in our Catholic Christian faith, I think you're just on a ship that's going to be tossed around and really, in a sense, go nowhere as fast.
Do you see economic turmoil, Peter, coming?
Well, we have it, Drew. We have a country where a small amount of group is doing well, while a vast majority of people are deteriorating, going sideways, or already fallen to levels that are unheard of. It's becoming more and more people are getting in a wagon to be pulled by less and less people. And eventually, the people that remain pulling are not going to want to pull. And that's my biggest concern. That's from the economic side. But where the real trouble is, obviously, from our spiritual side, is in the social aspect of what's happening. It is unheard of. If our grandparents, most of them our age, of course, if they passed, if we would describe what is happening just today in America, they would say that's impossible. Yeah. They just can't have those type of things. You don't do those things. But we see all sorts of issues. Lawlessness to where people can feel just openness to go and take up somebody else's and leave without any fear, and corporations actually firing their help because they try to stop the person from doing that. I mean, it's the absurdity. You could sit here and, like you said, I think, and you also, you can stay in all that and dwell in it, or you can find our peace and harmony in our faith. And I think you're going to need to call on, whether you're very involved in markets or whatever, or just punching a clock and trying to survive, which, remember, 60-something percent of all Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. They don't have much time to get caught up in a lot of stuff. They're just trying to stay afloat, and it's becoming harder and harder for them. That's my biggest concern in that area.
Yeah, no kidding. My guest today is Peter Granich. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. The number's 888-914-9149. I'll grab your call in a minute or two here. But again, 888-914-9149. Maybe you're concerned about your economic future, want a little bit of advice or insight. It's good to tap into that expertise from Peter. Peter, you know, I'm looking at what we are seeing happening with Target and Anheuser-Busch and Kohl's and a whole lot of other organizations that are out there right now. We're talking about the lessons. You know, what kind of lessons should these CEOs be learning? You know, from you know, the drubbing that Target and Anheuser-Busch were taking. I mean, they're not the only ones, of course. You know, yeah, Kohl's was another one I mentioned, but Chick-fil-A, now Cracker Barrel, they're all being targeted. What do you make of what's happening here? Because this, to me, is just bad business. Why, you know, North Face or any of these groups would want to go down this lane? It seems bad for their shareholders.
Well, you need to know what's happening behind the scenes, and some people who will do the homework will find this out. I put it up at both as a blog post and as a Twitter post. There's been an index formed, the business index. It was backed by Blackstone and Vanguard and another group who control more money of assets in the world than anybody else, and also George Soros, that it's an index that's been faced. Are you being whatever you want to call today's culture relative? And so corporations who need these companies and people for their financing have what they gone and doing diversified based on how this index, which has been developed by people that lean very hard to the left and with really little or no spirituality, and they're willing to even withstand people boycotting all versus losing the financial backing, which those CEOs that you speak of, most of know that's where their bread is butter, and especially their own personal bread and butter, than what may be a group of people who are voicing opposition to that. That's why, if you noticed, it's been so rampant and universal, like all of a sudden so many corporations switch their motive, because in the end of the day, those corporations are moved by capital, and two or three of the biggest people that control the capital are urging them to act that way, and that's what's really behind this.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, my guest today, Peter Granich. We'll take a few calls for you. 888-914-9149. Alicia, is up. Hi, Alicia. Good afternoon.
Hello. Here, hold on.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I was just calling because I don't know if you all heard Larry Fink say the other day, you've got to force the behavior on people.
No, I did not hear that.
Yes, he did.
Yes, yeah. Yes, he did. And see, what this is BlackRock and all these other groups. So I don't want to just say BlackRock. Mm-hmm. I want to say the name of the CEO that runs all of this. Mm. And his name is Larry Fink. We can equate him with George Soros, okay, in a different realm. But he's still doing the same thing. He's forcing all of this behavior by owning all of these companies. Yeah. And running these companies, he's forcing this behavior we see out in the streets, this ESG that's going to affect us all, and then this pride stuff. That's all coming from this.
Alicia, let me just follow up on that with Peter as well. Again, it goes to an earlier point. I mean, what's the benefit of it? To me, it's bad business, right? It's not good for your shareholder or your bottom line. Now, I know he wants to advance this particular ideology. But, you know, I don't understand from an economic perspective why a leader would want to do something like that, whether they believe this or not.
It's because, as I've been writing for quite some time, and as you know, and this is what keeps me off the, and I don't want to be there, but the major financial networks, but I'm still thankful for Relevant Radio, is because we're in the midst of an extremely large spiritual battle. And this is more than just humanist stuff. This is involving a force that we've been told would exist, and that's what it's come to. And it is extremely powerful. It is across the board. This isn't just happening in one sector or even one type of place. It's everywhere, right. And it impacts everybody. And as the caller pointed out, the major finances that really the movers and the so-called shakers, the World Economic Forum, places like that, they're all moving against what we believe in our faith. Let's just remember this, Drew. 50% of Americans now over are either atheist or agnostic. And if you think about the remaining 50%, when you think about, we're told that less than 25% of Catholics are even attending Mass, and who knows in the Protestant community or Judaism or whatever, the minority of people now are living a life based on faith, not the majority that our grandparents and all lived in. And that's part of what's allowed these changes to occur. And what we also have to remember through all of this, at least I try to remember before I put my head on the pillow, that God is still in control. It's not like God is up there going, what is going on? I had no idea this was happening. So, we have to find our faith and, of course, our salvation in our teachings and what the church teaches us. And that's the great battle that's underway. And like I keep saying, and believe me, Drew, this does not help business one bit. Things are going to get worse before they can possibly get better.
Hey, Alicia,
I know in your last quarter of the hour that you're optimistic, and I'm glad for that. We need to think that way. But I have to also take off my spiritual hat at times and just be a realistic when it comes to economies. And I just think socially, politically, and economically, other than the Civil War, this country hasn't been as much divided.
So you're thinking with the millstone of national debt around our neck that we really don't stand a chance of having a very robust economy. How do we fare against other nations?
Well, Drew, as I've always said to you, Scripture, you can't find a positive verse about debt. It's funny when people take the time to really look at our manual to life on how much God spent about things related to matters of money. There's more about matters of money and finance than there is about heaven or hell. And there's not one positive verse about debt. And if you look at the economics where people are in trouble, it's because of debt. I still see it. I still see 7 to 8 out of 10 families that come to our planning group from all levels of walk, even when I dealt with professionals, are living a lifestyle above where their finances truly support, not below. And again, my motto, which causes 8 out of 10 people to leave, is less is more.
So inflation is still with us, although there are some people saying that deflation is what we really should be worried about. Where do you see us going here? I mean, Elon Musk is worried about, warns housing prices are set to plunge. People are still paying unbelievable price for gas and for groceries. Interest rates are high with real estate. What do you see? What are you worried about, Peter? Deflation?
Well, I think the word that's still not being used enough to describe where we're at, and that's stagflation. But stagflation at a lower level than in the 70s, which means we don't have any real deflation.
Right.
We have some inflation, but we also have many pockets of slowing economy. There's still some pockets that are okay, but we're having more of a deterioration. And, of course, the big concern where that deterioration is, which I've told you about, is in commercial real estate, and in particular, office buildings and things of that nature. And the small business owner. This country's economy runs on the back of small business, not the major corporations. And it's becoming harder and harder to run a small business in America.
I want to go back to the phones, grab a few calls. But before I do, let me follow up on this issue of working remotely. I mean, Elon Musk, I pointed out, is warning that house prices are set to plunge. Commercial real estate, he says, right now is it a meltdown. And there are a lot of people worrying right now that, when it comes to commercial real estate, when those leases expire, because people are even doing a hybrid version of work, or they have not returned to the offices at all. What does that mean? Half of the biggest global companies plan to cut office space. And a lot of U.S. cities are going to suffer as a result. I think I read something like 50% of these companies are going to be doing this in the next three years. It's led by San Francisco. What's going to happen with all this empty office space, and what do you see happening in commercial real estate?
Well, that's one of the main reasons why I urge avoiding it. And one of the areas where investors are going to be hit by that is many, especially seniors or people that were dependent on income, were put into real estate investment trust REITs. And unfortunately, because they were paying better dividends and they could earn at the banks at the time. Sure. But a lot of those REITs have a lot of commercial real estate, particularly office buildings and what have you. But there's another factor impacting.
But let me ask you about that for a second, Peter. Could that be the next big risk for banks?
Well, it is. That's one of the things that's still happening. That's why there many people you talk to small. We have a lot of clients and small businesses all around the country, and they've said that in the last 60 days, the ability to walk in and get the credit that used to be available is gone.
Wow.
And so they have to shore up and all for that and all. But there's another thing that's also impacting those cities, and that's the lawlessness that's happening. It's kind of hard when if you can think you could sit home, work easily, not have to travel and commute and problems where there's, you know, either congestion or actually fear to get in some commuting, then get in the city and you're concerned about your life. And that's happening in many major cities, not just one or two. So when you combine all those things, and you brought up another point, by the way, Musk is probably one of the most interesting people in recent years.
I agree.
When you think about the amount of money, normally you hear different types of things coming out of those people. He's not running around in that crowd. I don't know. He's a kind of unique character. I mean, for somebody that's extremely, extremely wealthy, he still has a lot of thoughts of the common person, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Kathy in Anaheim, thanks for joining us. You are on the air.
Thank you. This is a topic that has come up before about like Vanguard. It's one of the few things that I'm still invested in that is stock related. Do you stay in so you have a voice, or do you get out as a moral objection to what they stand for?
Well, that's a personal choice. I tell you what has become difficult, and I know that there are some sponsors, thankfully, to Relevant Radio that invest based on values. It's becoming more difficult to stay invested in certainly major corporations because of this accepting these ways that they feel they have to in order to be sure of capital flows. So it's becoming more challenging to invest by ethics. But those are all individual decisions. I don't think any one person can make a judgment for anyone else. I think you've got to make that decision on your own.
All right. Kathy,
Thank you.
I hope that helps. Yeah, it's a tough situation. It really is. You know, Peter, I would back away from anything that you know, is immoral. Try to find some of those more ethical alternatives, you know, personally. But you're right. You got to evaluate a lot of other factors to weave into that particular situation there. Pat in Minneapolis, Minnesota, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm wondering about what this company called Strive Asset Management was run by Vivek Ramaswamy, who's running for president now. And another, I think, partner of his. I think they got into this because they wanted to fight BlackRock, I think it's called, and it's kind of a David and Goliath thing where they're getting assets to manage. And then he, the first 2 days, he got $60 million in one stock called Drill. It was a oil companies. And then he wrote letters to Chevron's CEO and a bunch of the other ones saying, hey, we have this group of stockholders that wants you to do your fiduciary responsibilities towards them and make money and get out of all this other woke agenda that you're dealing with, and putting pressure on them. And then now he's had to remove himself from that company because he's running for president.
Right.
And I'm wondering what that kind of charge or a technique to fight them back in that way, what you think of that, and if that would be helpful. It's to me like a David and Goliath kind of thing, but I think they're moving on as well to other techniques about gathering stockholders, small ones together, and voting their stocks all together. And I don't know what kind of a company they set up for that, so that the stockholders' interests, fiduciary interests, are made the top level of concern rather than the woke interest.
Pat, thank you for the call. Peter, I'll let you respond.
So the David and Goliath story we know because of Scripture, but I think this one may not have the same turnaround. Yes, it's advocacy and welcome that, but it still remains that much of the capital that is moving markets or used to supposedly expand economies and all are coming from the likes of the Black Rocks and Vanguards. And quite frankly, it's very, very hard for people to even know. A lot of people are teachers or what have you and just have their funds being managed and don't even realize that a lot of that is now being managed by groups like that. So if you want it to be diversified, sometimes it's even hard not to do it because your company or the union or what have you doesn't give you the choice of using somebody like the David versus the Goliaths. And that's the other challenge right now. It's a world built for major capitalism. It's very, very tough for the little guy or gal to battle in the capital world still to these days.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, Peter, you know, we have a few moments left. I always want to give you the final thoughts, final words. Anything you want to leave us with?
I still am just waiting to hear your prediction, whether it's Green Bay or the Eagles this year. So,
well, it's probably going to be the Eagles this year if I had to look long term, but I love both those teams, so I'll root for them both.
Well, anyway, you know, just I always like to tell people, no matter how hard this sounds and how much you feel things look bad, salvation is going to be found in our faith, and it's mostly in the book that a lot of us don't read enough, and that's our manual of life, the Holy Bible.
Well, Peter, thanks for being here. By the way, how are you feeling? You holding up okay?
Absolutely great on that end. And I can't begin to tell you how many people from Relevant Radio still to this day drop me a line and just say, you know, Peter, keep on. I can't wait to hear you and keep on trucking. And because of that, I'm grateful. But I always ask those people, please, you've got to support Relevant Radio. These are the rare chances for people like me to have an opportunity to say like this. Trust me, major networks would never have allowed this conversation. So please, those of you that write, please support Relevant Radio.
I always try to give people a perspective on life they won't find anywhere else. And you're one of those great people who can do that. Hey, before I go, Peter, back to office or work from home? Do you have a position on it?
Yeah, I like working from home.
All right. Well, that's personal, right? I'm going to talk about that when I come back. There's a big debate over it right now. Elon Musk and others saying, hey, back in the office, is one more productive? You might be surprised at some of the data. I'll share that and more when I return. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Get a 360-degree look at all the news and issues of the day right now. This is the Drew Mariani Show, getting you connected on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's a classic, huh? A little Hootie and the Blowfish. That's a throwback. Great to be here with you today. Thanks for joining me. Hey, I got a question for you. I'd love to hear your take. Where do you stand? Remote work versus office work? What about a hybrid? Is there a happy medium? There was a time where nobody really worked from home. A few people did, but fundamentally everybody went into the office, right? I have a young daughter who, with COVID hit, still had to go into the office. And I saw her the other day. She wants to change jobs. And she said to me, I said to her, well, what do you want to do? I want to work from home. So you want to work from home? She's like 26 years old. I'm like, what do you want to do working from home? You know, there's something about culture, you know, in an office place. You meet people, you learn things, you know, you're part of the mission. But this next generation wants to work from home. I got a son who's a financial analyst, and he works largely from home, although the office wants him to go in, I think, once a week or something like that. So he's somewhat of a hybrid. Now, me personally, during COVID, I could get to the studio if I wanted to, but most of my producers were either working remotely or we ended up being just separated. I worked remotely, and when it first happened, I thought, I hate this. I need to have eye contact with my producers, my call screeners, people here. But after a while, it's like, this is kind of nice. I like this remote work, right? It was kind of great. You know, the show prep, everything that I do to get ready. When I come into the office here, if you ever come by our network headquarters here where I broadcast out of, you know, all the doors in this building are glass, right? You can see through, all the offices are pretty much glass. And I'm always hearing, knock, knock, knock. Hey, come on in. You know, next thing you know, we're talking. There's 20 minutes of my day, right? 15 minutes of my day. Time goes. And I find myself sometimes better prepared, because a big part of what I do here is the time I put into knowing the material I'm going to share with you and talk about, you know? And when I was working remotely, my surprise was I thought I was better prepared. I had greater focus. I had greater productivity being remote versus being in. But there's a trade-off. Okay, I might be better prepared. I might have less distractions. But what about the culture? What about the work culture, right? What about being part of something bigger than your own house, right, or your own private office? What about the workplace, you know, getting to know people, being part of a workplace ecosystem, if you will, deepening those workplace friendships, right? There's a lot there. What about the sense of mission? And when you go into a building, when you're in an office, I don't know, there's a certain sense of being part of the mission of that organization. It may be easier to stay in there. If working remotely, is there a decline in that sense of mission? And I'd love to hear from you. If you are a business owner, what are you saying? You want your employees back? Elon Musk said, hey, come back to work. Amazon workers were all, boy, they were mad, weren't they? We don't want to go back to work. I understand that, but my attitude is, if your employer wants you in the office, right, and he's paying your, they're writing your paycheck, that's where they want you, then you got to go into the office. If you don't find another job, right, that's kind of my attitude with it. But I think there are pros and cons to this, and love to get your own take. You know, has your attitude changed like mine? You know, I was diametrically opposed to working remotely as a broadcaster. I thought I needed to be in, and then the pendulum swung to the other side, and I'm like, hey, this is great. I don't want to go back into the office. I'm back in studio now, and I don't want to work remotely again. You get comfortable, I think, also in your setting. But the number here, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'm going to say that number 1,000 times. Why I stumbled over it, I don't know. Mario Ensler is a former Swiss guard, a former Swiss banker, and a former business professor at both Catholic University of America and the University of St. Thomas in Houston. And he is now a consultant for a number of church entities, and his project called Borromeo Project. You can find them online, borromeoproject.org. We can talk about that. But I thought I'd tap into his business acumen and expertise on what he's seeing and what the data is now saying and his own personal take on this. And Mario, it's good to have you here with me today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. Always an honor and a privilege for me to be here.
Well, thank you.
And I totally agree with what you are saying. The world is splitting up, except in Italy. In Italy, nobody works from home. I was recently there. Either you come to work or you're fired. So
right.
We can talk because we are in the United States. If we were in Milano, we will not have the conversation you and I today.
Yeah. You know what I found interesting? You know, and again, I find myself more productive remotely. I'm a very social person, so it's easy to get distracted. But there was a study that was done that said that the remote workers are 67% more productive on average. What do you think of that data? Do people get more done in the office or at home, or does it come down to who you are? Like, I'm very disciplined. I work on my show all the time, so it's not a matter of punching a clock. Does it come down to the individual?
I've seen that data, Drew, and to be more specific, the data said that people that work from home, they put in 57 hours of work per week,
yeah,
rather than those that are in the office, that generally, on an average, they put in 38 hours of work before they feel completely burned out.
Yeah.
Okay? So there are obviously different reasons for higher workload for people that are working at home, but I was in academia when COVID hit. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were forced to stay home and trying to educate through online platform. And it was a nightmare because of lack of discipline on both sides, of the professor's side and of the student side. Wow. But it all turned, Drew, when discipline came in, when professors were able to communicate to their students, hey, this is like being in a classroom, so you don't need to show up on Zoom with your pajamas on, dress up, right?
Yeah.
So students will respond. And today, I coach several CEOs of companies that are dealing with this dilemma, and it boils down to two words, accountability and transparency. In other words, good management of working at home, it totally depends on the trust between the manager and the employees, right? There are some people that they perform better if they have a totally different time frame on a daily basis, you know, working early in the morning, doing their project, achieving their tasks, and then focusing more maybe on family life if they have to, and go back later. And as long as they meet the goals and the expectation, frankly, many CEO, they boil down to a cash flow analysis.
Yep.
And today, as a matter of fact, this morning, I was talking to a business owner that he just hired his CFO, and the CFO is not relocating. And so he told the CFO, well, you live in Michigan, the company is in Texas, I'm going to pay you according to Michigan wages. And the guy said, absolutely, I would not expect that.
Wow.
Different, right? So it boils down to transparency and accountability, of course, on the fact if you cannot do the job.
Let's do this. We'll grab a couple calls. If you want to get in and sound off, share your own experience, maybe you're a manager, maybe you are forced to go back to work, maybe you love working from home, maybe you think hybrid's the way to go, the number's 888-914-9149. And Mary is listening to us in Houston, Texas. Mario, hi. Mary, you're on the air with Mario Ensler.
Hi, Mary.
So I am actually, hi. I am actually an administrator in higher education, and I can tell you that this is quite a debate with our system. It does make management of people who are working remotely more difficult because of the communication and the accountability. I prefer, frankly, to trust that people are being professional. I prefer not to micromanage them. But part of that is also, I am trying to hire faculty who know how to deliver a good distance learning program. And that is not always the case.
Correct.
So I'm of divided mind on this, but fortunately it's not for me to decide. I have other college leaders who are making that decision.
Yeah, interesting. All right, Mario, I'll let you respond.
Well, nice to meet you, Mary. I hear you. As I said at the beginning, a lot of faculty were extremely reluctant because they felt that they could not perform or deliver concepts through a screen the same way that they could in a classroom, right? In a classroom, you feed off the students' facial expressions and energy. In a Zoom meeting, it's totally different, especially when students, they tell you, oh, my camera's broken, I cannot turn it on, right? But I see that by human nature, we know how to adapt and to overcome any deficiency, human deficiency or technical deficiency. So, yes, today it boils down to this. If somebody's willing to do it, and there are the prerequisites, obviously, to do it, I always say, go ahead and do it. When somebody is very reluctant because he needs community, he needs to go to the office, he needs to have a career path, right? And he's paranoid that working from home will damage his career advancement and so on and so far, then do not force it. Right. That will be my advice.
Mary, thanks for the call. I'm going to take just a short pause. I'm up against this final break of the program. When we come back, we'll grab a few more calls. If you're just joining us, just taking a look at returning to the office versus not. Elon Musk, Amazon, lots of places saying, hey, we want you back in. There are benefits from working from home that are obvious, but there are also a lot of benefits from working from the office. And of course, there is the hybrid version. What's the future of work look like? Office space is in trouble in this country. We'll talk more when I return. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Thanks for joining me. If you missed any part of the conversation, simply go to relevantradio.com or where your podcast is housed. Maggie will have this show up. You can revisit it and listen to it. Great conversations today. If you're just joining me, Mario Ensler joins me as we explore remote work versus in-person work and what the research says. You know, companies today continue to wrestle with how often their employees should come into the office versus work remotely. And leaders have different opinions. Employees have different opinions. There are definitely pros and cons. Working away from the office, working remotely, you know, you can balance your life. You can work, you know, on your own schedule. There's less distractions. You're not paying for dry cleaning and for tolls and for gas and for lunch. But as a result of it now, we're seeing a real crisis with office space across the country. And this is a looming problem, both for banks and in terms of that space. A lot of businesses right now are not going to re-sign those leases that are coming to an end because half their offices are empty. But without offices, you also maybe, you know, lose a place to escape from your home life. People sometimes like to get to work, right? Separate home from work. There's also less knowledge of the workplace when you work remotely. You're not part of that ecosystem that's there, that ecosystem, and some are concerned it will lead to a decline in professionalism. You know, so you can learn things from people that are here. I mean, people, the old veteran down the hall, you know, you tap into their expertise, whether it's sales or whatever it might be, you know, marketing, advertising, broadcasting. You know, you can tap into others who've been there a long time. There's a lot you can learn from. So there are pros and cons. What is better? And the data is kind of divided on this as well. But I want to welcome back my guest, Mario Ensler. And as I said, he's a former business professor at the Catholic University of America and the University of St. Thomas in Houston. Check him out at BorromeoProject.org. And Mario, let's go right to the phones. Peter Atkinson, believe it or not, is one of my colleagues here at Relevant Radio. He's calling in. Peter, good to have you on the air with us.
It's good to be on the air with you, Drew, and you, Mario.
Good to hear it from you, Peter.
So I'm fascinated by this conversation because I'm a millennial. I love remote work, but I'm the head of the Mary Bakers at Relevant Radio, and we work with a lot of actors. And a lot of people record audio shows remotely. A lot of audio dramas and animation studios will work with actors remotely. But we've made the choice that every time we record a show, we bring all of the actors in person into our studios.
Oh, wow.
Because I believe really strongly that when you have actors opposite each other performing a script together, you get a different energy than if you're recording people individually by themselves across the entire country. And yet, at the same time, we work with dozens of sound designers and writers who are remote, So how I've seen it break down is different types of work lend themselves to different levels of being remote. But the thing that I see, and I'd be curious as to your thoughts on it, is I think people are unaware of the fact that when they get remote, they are much more easily replaceable. So, for instance, if you're working remote as a customer service representative and you're in Indiana, you could be replaced by about 10,000 other people across the country, from Tennessee to Wyoming to foreign people. Some of the sound designers we work with are not based in the United States, and they're fantastic to work with, and some of them are. So I think there's a vulnerability to remote work that people aren't aware of when they advocate it wholeheartedly.
Hold that thought for a second, because if you have more, I'd love to have you follow up on it, but that's such a great point, Mario. I want your take on that, because I've often heard it's the person that's in the office is the one that's more likely to get promoted or to get the raise.
Correct.
To Peter's point, when you work remotely, you may love it, out of sight, sometimes out of mind.
Well, What I have experienced in the past few years is the unwillingness of major corporations to rewrite HR policies and procedures, because you can fix what it just defined with internal policies and procedures. You can protect whoever works remotely and make him or her subject to the same risks, so to speak, of somebody working internally. But major company like Yahoo, for instance, they refuse to do that, right? And so I agree. There is this perception, but it shouldn't be like that. Because many people, they say, well, my business is suffering because there is lack of innovation, lack of creativity, because when the employers, they go to the coffee machine, they bounce off ideas and so on and so forth. Well, today we live in the virtual era, right? And a company like Salesforce, everybody knows Salesforce, okay? They created a platform that's called Chatter, if I'm not mistaken. And that platform keeps the employees involved with each other like if they are in the cafeteria together. So my message here is it's the willingness of the company to really figure out how to protect the dignity of their workers, okay, despite the fact that they are sitting at their desk or at their kitchen table.
Peter, you want to follow up?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's beautiful to hear you highlight the dignity of workers, because I think it's easy to let work and the remote era turn workers into being just instruments. And I think it's really important to prioritize trust and building up the relationships between people, especially in a remote environment. And I'd be curious, my question to both of you is, Do you think there's anything about our Catholic faith that sort of requires or emphasizes being in person? Do you think there's anything about our Catholic faith and the incarnational aspect of our faith that can help us understand the right way to balance the advantages of remote work, being able to collaborate with people across the world, versus the fact that we are flesh and blood? We do need eye contact. Yeah. We do need to touch and see each other.
It's such a great point. Mario, I'll let you respond to it, but what Maggie and I were just saying here, you know, it's like being present for Mass versus not, you know, watching it on television or streaming it versus being there in community.
That's my point, right? It's like when we were forced to not being able to be the Mass, to watch Masses on video during COVID. I will have my family dress up as Sunday, okay, and really get there 15 minutes early, and we didn't leave after the spiritual communion because we had to go into the parking lot, okay?
Right.
But getting to the point, I would say that we have to remember that the economy must always serve people and not the other way around. And so what I want to say is that work is always more than just a way to making a living, to making a wage, right? Because it is a form of continuing participation in what I call God's creation. So the answer is, if the dignity of work is to be protected, then I would say that the basic needs and rights of workers must be respected.
Right, okay.
And I'll leave it at that.
Hey, Peter, thank you very much for the call. Great to have you join that conversation. Grateful to have you here. Let me move along, though, because I only have a couple moments left. A lot of people want to get in on the conversation. Gary's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I work for one of the largest banks in the country, and they're forcing us back to work when we are back to work twice a week. And I disagree with a one-size-fits-all policy. I think it should be situational. I work with people in other cities, and we're all seasoned people. So coming in the office doesn't do anything for us, especially we have to use the phone to talk with each other. Whereas somebody who's inexperienced, who needs to be mentored, who works with people in the same city, it makes sense for them to come in. Or if they work on a team where they need to share ideas in the office with each other, that also makes sense. But a one-size-fits-all policy does not make sense.
Gary, thanks for the call. And Mario, that's kind of your point, though, isn't it? We need to evaluate everyone's situation.
Absolutely. Now, we also have some time to have the business owner hat on, right? Mm-hmm. So like when Bank of America, for instance, said to the employees, you've got to come back.
Right.
Well, you know, there is a cost analysis that the bank is doing, like you mentioned before. What the heck are we going to do with all of this space if nobody's using it, right? So in order to justify the cost, the business owner has to try. I will say in situation like that, hybrid works well, where you could have somebody come in, you know, once a week or, you know, I don't know, three times a month, but always focus on what the employee wants based on how he can perform, because ultimately that's what matters.
Well, let me offer my deepest apologies to everyone from Denver to Florida, or I should say from San Diego to Florida, from Texas to Minnesota here. I won't be able to get all your calls on. I have less than a minute. I'd like to give you those final thoughts, Mario.
Well, As I said before, this is a huge debate. It depends which hat you wear. But again, the economy must serve the people. And we have to remember that if we walk away from there, we are going to go into what we call a can of worms, and we are not going to be able to survive, right? Yeah. It's never the other way around. It's that the economy must serve people and not the other way around.
My gratitude to you, Mario. Great to have you. It's Mario Ensler. You can find him at BorromeoProject.org. I am out of time for the day. Cale Clark is coming straight up. Until we talk again, I'll be praying for you. Say a prayer for me and appreciate it. Have a great day.